You are listening to your community radio station, KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284 AL Haleiwa. It's time for In the Garden on the Farm.
Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. We're your hosts, Robin and Paul, and on today's show, we will sharpen our skills for getting into an underappreciated seasonal fruit, the pomelo, bump up our community participation with WIPA, and sweeten our soil-building efforts with molasses. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you, in partnership with our generous underwriters.
Aloha, Robin.
Aloha, Paul.
Another beautiful day in the garden on the farm.
True enough.
Great to see all these crops growing so well. The harvest's happening. Right behind that, we're replanting. We're growing our cover crops we talked about last week. All is well on the garden.
True enough. Yeah, I'm so excited to be in planting time here.
We're joined by some special friends today to talk about some of the details of farming, gardening, appreciating the local culture of Kahlo here. So we're going to get started right away with our celestial session, looking to the heavenly bodies above for inspiration and guidance on our planting and other activities that we may be doing in the gardens. And we'll start with the Hawaiian moon phase, as we do. And today's Hawaiian moon phase is brought to you by the 2014 Hanalei Moon and Tide Calendar, a Hanalei Watershed Hui publication, as well as the Astronomical Applications Department of the U.S. Naval Observatory. That's where our very detailed information about moon rising, transits, and setting come from as well. And I know some of the different organizations that produce those moon calendars also use that resource. So today's Hawaiian moon phase is Hoaka, and this is in the Ho'onui, Anahulu, the first of 3 weeks in the Hawaiian moon month. And Hoaka rose here on Kauai at 6:53 a.m. this morning. She reached her transit. She will reach her transit, her highest point in the sky, at 12:57 p.m. And she'll set at 6:58 p.m. this evening. According to the U.S. Naval Observatory, 0% of the moon's face will be illuminated today, so it'll be interesting to see maybe right there around sunset to confirm that indeed none of the moon's face is illuminated. This brings up the question of what the moon phases actually mean. We know that there are a certain number of moon phases, 29 and a half days it takes for the moon to actually make her full transit. And so we know that on the one hand, the Hawaiian moon phases refer to an appearance of the moon, but it also is a progression of the moon. And in this case, Hoaka, which means a crescent, actually isn't visible on the day that is Hoaka. But it is the day that follows Hilo, which is the first day, and indeed the new moon was last night at 8:14 p.m. So not as cut and dried as we might think. Like everything in nature, there are multiple considerations to take into effect, and this time around, our crescent moon Hoaka is actually not a crescent, but continues to be hidden.
Very cool. Are there any planting recommendations
for
this?
Thank you for the reminder. In fact, the traditional recommendation for today is that today is unproductive for planting. And of course, there are many other activities that we can do in the garden and tending all of the growing plants, planting, of course, being only one of the many tasks that we have before us. So let's take care of the plants that are already in the ground. And we can plant starting tomorrow.
Excellent. Well, yeah, that's interesting. in the Western view of things, new moon is typically a really great time to get some seeds in the ground. I know that's a very commonly held idea among so many people. So very interesting to note that the day after, it's like you kind of maybe missed the window. Well, in the biodynamic look at things, today through Friday, the moon will be in Virgo, an earth sign, making it time to work with our root plants. And it is the transplanting time here in this system. So the root plants that I'm going to be looking at are, since I already have a nice crop of taro growing, and I don't feel like I'm going to be planting any more right yet until I do some more harvesting, but I'm going to look at my carrot seeds and my beets. These are excellent fall crops. Also, turnips can be good at the change of the season here when our nights and mornings are a little bit cooler. Saturday, the moon will be in Libra, an air sign, making it time to work with our flowering plants. And Sunday through Tuesday, the moon will enter Scorpio, a water sign, making it a good time to work with our leafy plants. So also, I'm going to be looking into things like cabbages, maybe doing an early crop. I just have the sensibility that it's going to be a fairly dry winter based on things I've been reading. So I'm going to go ahead and take a chance that an early planting won't just melt in the ground like it did last year.
Right on. Robin, I am excited because I have sprouted again kohlrabi, which maybe we'll focus on a bit more. But I'm wondering, from your experience, is that a brassica that is going to especially benefit from dry as well?
I think probably so. Too much water on the brassicas, as I saw last year. We had just so much rain starting in October that just really didn't seem to stop, that they got really melty. And I, too, was eyeing up the kohlrabi seeds, although I haven't taken the chance at putting them in the soil just yet.
Well, I'm excited, too, that that seed has been stored for some years and they're still sprouting up readily. So a reminder to our listeners to store your seeds well, and that's just part of the whole process that goes into saving seed, germinating seed, and then harvesting seed, and then ultimately sharing that seed with the community.
Yes, and that will lead us beautifully into our next segment called Notable News.
And our notable news for this month is that we are going to be providing an opportunity for folks on the North Shore as well as the West Side to save, to share the seeds that they've saved, to trade seeds and cuttings. And this is our biannual seed and plant exchange time. And we have the 14th biannual Kauai Community Seed and Plant Exchange coming up on Sunday, November 2nd. And it's going to be at Molawa'a Organika'a in Molawa'a. Wonderful organic farm, Ned and Marta's farm there in Molawa'a. Very happy that they've opened the garden gate for us to be able to have that celebration right there in the epicenter of organic growing in Molawa'a.
Very cool. And if you don't mind me acting like this is a little bit of an interview with you, Paul, you'd mentioned to me that you are also planning some workshops previous to November 2nd, and I wondered if you'd be willing to share some of the details about that with our listeners.
I sure will. Well, let me say as well, there will be a second seed exchange too, which will lead into why we're holding two workshops. It's actually the same workshop, but there is going to be, in the following weekend, there will be a seed exchange in Kekaha, and this is going to be at the second Aloha Aina Festival, and so it's going to be the Aloha Aina Festival Seed Exchange on Saturday, November 8th at the Kekaha Boathouse in Kekaha. And in order to better ready our community and ourselves for sharing seeds, plants, and cuttings, we will be holding a workshop in two locations just about a month before both of those seed exchanges, and coming up pretty fast now. And the workshop is entitled Exchanging Seeds, Plants, and Cuttings. It's going to be held first on Monday, October 6th at the Kauai Community Seed Bank in Molawa'a from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. And then on Monday, October 13th at the Smoky Valley Park Clubhouse in Waimea. People who attend the workshop will learn how to safely and effectively share plant material with friends and neighbors, learn how to avoid spreading pest and disease, and folks will even be receiving seeds, starts, and cuttings from the Regenerations team in order to propagate them in time for the exchange. So we have collaborators, and Robin, you've been a fantastic collaborator through the years in terms of propagating a quantity of plants to give away at the seed exchange. Now we're trying to expand that effort and make sure that many, many trays of healthy plants and cuttings, rooted cuttings, are coming to the exchange, especially for in a place like Waimea, where we're just kind of getting started over there. Maybe not so many people will be bringing material to share unless we coordinate with them first. So that's the initiative with this seed and plant, with this exchanging seeds, plants, and cutting workshop that we will be doing. And we encourage people to be in touch. It is going to be limited seating, so we encourage you to reach out to Regenerations, and our telephone number is 652-4118 to make sure that we'll have room for you at the workshop. There will be a suggested donation, but the important thing is that we just get people to come out, learn about how to bring the healthiest plant material possible. And it's very important, as we mention oftentimes on the show, that we're not spreading pest and disease. So we'll be looking at some of the specific problems that we're going to be avoiding, how to identify the pests and diseases that we want to make sure that we're not spreading.
Yeah, one thing we all know about the plant and seed exchanges is the more, the merrier. And we love it when we see such healthy stuff arriving. So I commend you a lot for getting that workshop together. And I commend all of our listeners for calling up Regenerations and registering for one of those events. I'm very excited to be a part of it myself.
Right on. The number again, 652-4118. And the dates again, Sunday, November 2nd for the seed and plant exchange in Moloa'a. Saturday, November 8th for the Aloha Aina Festival Seed Exchange in Kekaha. And then the two workshops on exchanging seeds, plants, and cuttings, Monday, October 6th in Moloa'a, and Monday, October 13th in Waimea.
Excellent. Thank you, Paul.
Absolutely. And now we're going to have a look at the farmers markets tables. I know we have a lot of listeners who make the pilgrimage every week, and folks are probably having a combination of going back to the table and hoping that the farmer has that amazing thing that they got last week and they just didn't get enough of it, but that they're also looking for something new that's maybe coming into season at the market. And one of the ones that made its way to me roundabout, somebody who'd been to the farmer's market and then busted it out as a tasty snack, is the feature of this particular segment we're doing now. And Robin's going to share it with us.
Absolutely. I would like to turn everybody on to pomelo. It is definitely, when you said you go back the following week to see if there's more of that, I guarantee there's going to be more of it, because pomelo is just sadly underappreciated as a really delicious fruit. Sometimes people call it the jabong. If you're not familiar with the term pomelo, it's technically Citrus maxima, or sometimes called Citrus grandis. And may also not realize that it's part of the breeding stock of some really common things that we already know about. For instance, grapefruits are the cross of an orange and a Citrus maxima. That's how the grapefruit came to be. And a tangelo is the cross of a tangerine and a Citrus maxima. So pomelo's in there, even if you didn't know you were necessarily enjoying it. There's quite a number of varieties, the red ones being a little more rare. What we generally see here are either yellow-fleshed or green fleshed being my favorite. That's the Tahitian variety, otherwise known as pamplemousse. Sure is a treat, although the Chandler and a small, sort of a little bit different one is the cocktail grapefruit, but technically a Citrus Maxima. That's got a very interesting, ultra sweet flavor for something more close to a grapefruit. And there's also, as it comes from Southeast Asia, the Thai varieties are definitely the most common. There must be 20 of them. Didn't list them all here, but the Siamese sweet and things like that are really excellent. However, I want to let everybody know how I get into a pomelo, because they're not very expensive to buy at the market, and they are just chock full of delicious, sweet juice packets. Once you get yourself past the pith, the heavy skins. Now, a lot of people look at a grapefruit. When I grew up, the way we did it was we cut it crossways and exposed, and we'd get a spoon and dig it out. And that certainly is one way to get in to a grapefruit. And you remember those little serrated spoons and funny looking grapefruit knives. But what I've had better luck with is actually cutting it the opposite way. So in parallel with the sections. Right. And once I do that once, then I'll cut it in half the other way. And I take a sharp knife and slice down the point that was the middle of the fruit where all the pits came together. And I deftly take that away. And with a nice pointed small spoon, you can then just make your way into each section very easily. And you want to do this part over a big bowl, because it's going to exude a lot of juice while you're removing all of these inner sections. And they really are just the plumpest little packets of deliciousness, and clear away all the fruit from in between the pits. And then my recommendation is to put a lid on it, stick it in the refrigerator until the next day, or at least a few hours later, so it's ice cold when you get to it. And really, you can just put that on your spoon, and it doesn't need anything else. Also, so much juice will have accumulated in the bottom of that bowl. You can certainly pour it off and have it as a nice, healthy drink, or, you know, you may find it as a nice addition to a cocktail during cocktail hour as well. But don't be afraid of the pomelo. They're abundant. This is definitely one part of their season, although they seem to have multiple seasons throughout the year. I haven't been able to put months on those just yet, but when they appear, there's lots of them. And farmers never like taking too much stuff home from market, so you can usually get them at a pretty good bargain. And they're high in vitamin C and potassium. They're low calorie, high fiber if you do choose to eat the pith, although I think you can only eat so much of that.
I think this would be a great example of a fruit that is especially good to get at the market, because assumedly, if a farmer is selling the pomelo, it's going to be of at least decent quality. And I would rate pomelo along with jackfruit as two fruits that, if they're not any good, they're really not good. Mm. They're terrible. And so pomelo that occurs as a, I'm guessing, as a seedling grown plant, can often just have extremely dry flesh, mm-hmm. no flavor, just be extremely disappointing as a fruit. And likewise, the jackfruit, a lot of those seed-borne fruits are just mealy and terrible tasting. But I am curious to know how much of an influence the environment has, because it seems that the pomelo that I've had from a high rainfall area is the best, but maybe that's just happens to be that those are the best varieties. I know you live in a bit of a drier area. Are you growing pomelo at your place?
You know, right now, and I was just going to say, I'll let you know, I have my first three pamplemousse on the plant. Mm. The plant's growing really well. Mm. I'm interested. The dry flesh of citrus is a problem called granulosis, and there's lots of different things that can cause granulosis, and I know on a future show we'll get a chance to really go in depth about it, but oddly, sometimes over-watering or too much water can actually cause this, so...
Oh, wow.
I have been treating the tree really nicely and giving it sort of moderate water. And once I cut those fruits off and I see what the quality is, that's similar to the taro we've talked about. You know, you just don't know what you're going to get until you cook it up and eat it. But you're totally correct that a farmer's not going to have that fruit on their table unless they know it's really high quality. So that is a good place to start.
Yep. Tremendous. Can't wait to have a pomelo sometime soon. Today we're finishing off our focus on Kahlo with social evolution on the land, and we couldn't think of a better guest to have on than Stacy Sproat Beck of Waipa Foundation. Stacy grew up in Kalihiwai, Kauai, part of a family who has lived, fished, farmed, and managed nearshore and riparian resources for four generations. After graduating from Kamehameha Schools and USC with a BS in business entrepreneurship, Stacy moved home in 1992 to manage the Waipa Project, a Hawaiian community-based land management initiative partially founded by her father. Over the years, and as executive director, Stacy has helped grow the Waipa Foundation from a small, entirely volunteer organization to a thriving nonprofit with 17 staff and over 25 weekly volunteers, which implements programming and activities in and manages the 1,600-acre Waipa watershed as an Ahupua'a learning center and a Hawaiian community center. Stacy is married to David Beck and has two girls, Mahie, age 12, and Melelai, 8. Stacy, thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Mahalo to you and Robin, Paul, for doing this show.
Absolutely. How's it growing down in Waipa?
It's going great. I just finished making poi.
Oh, fabulous. And how is it tasting this time of year?
The poi? How's the poi tasting?
Yeah.
The poi is this batch is Onoloa, because I just made it right now. It's such a hot time of year that the poi, we're seeing it sour a little bit more quickly. So if you like sour poi, it's a good time of year for you.
Do love it. Yes, indeed.
Very cool. So you don't just do poi on Thursdays on your poi day, but you make poi any chance you get?
Well, you know, we do... We're really community-based, and we try to help out our community as often as we can. And so often farmers will come to us, ohana will come to us and ask to grind poi on a different day if they have a need for their family or a party or a gathering or other things like this. This batch actually today I just happened to be sending to some ohana in New York. So I have to do it Wednesday so it gets there on Friday.
Wow, incredible. Well, nice to know that some of that delicious taro coming right from Hanalei is making it so far out there into the world. That's incredible. Well, we'd love to talk to you about Poi Day Thursdays, which is a regular time for poi making with the community. And just to round out our discussion on taro with you and ask you a few questions about Poi Day, some details. If you want to talk about it.
Absolutely.
So how long has it been going on?
So our Thursday Community Poi Day has been going on for about 25 years now.
Wow.
We shut down for a couple, maybe not even a year, I think, months after the hurricane because our buildings were 80% destroyed and nobody had power for a while. But other than that, and we may have shut down intermittently in between due to shortage of kalo and different factors, but other than that, we've basically been making poi as a community here at Waipa for about 25 years.
So you want to tell us what a typical Thursday is like there, what time you get started, and what one could expect if we wanted to come and help out?
Sure. How about if I tell you first about why we started Thursday Community Poi Day? So we first started making poi on Thursday with community volunteers in Ohana and Kupuna because the Waipa founders, the community that started Waipa and the Kupuna, saw that poi in the late 80s was getting so expensive that families weren't able to afford to eat it as a staple food anymore. If you have to go buy it in the store, it's really expensive. Back then, they were probably seeing the price rise to about $3 a pound. Today, the average retail price is $6 to $8 a pound. And poi is really our staple food, and that concerned them. So they realized that with all the connections and contacts that they had here in the Hanalei area, along the North Shore, Halele'a, that they could easily get a few bags of kalo here and there, raw kalo, and cook it up and grind it into poi and cook it, clean it, make it into poi themselves, and take some home and share the rest with family and friends and charge just enough to break even on the kalo that they purchased from the farmers. So we basically kept that formula, and they, back then, they were probably making 50, 100 pounds a week. Today we make about 1,000 to 1,200 pounds of poi every Thursday, which gets distributed directly to families at a break-even price and a non-break-even price to Kupuna. But the goal still is, and the goal still is to basically keep it available and affordable on the tables of people, especially Hawaiian people, that will eat it as a staple food.
Yeah, wow. What a noble cause. I heard you say that you also deliver the poi on Thursdays, and you take quite a drive to do that. So this is really a excellent community service that you're providing, too.
Yeah, you know, the Ohana on the west side and the south side and Lihue side appreciate poi as well, and especially for our Ni'ihau Ohana, they still eat poi as a staple food. And so my dad, for years, and still intermittently now, my dad played music down at Waimea Plantation Cottages every Thursday evening. So it was convenient for him to load up the poi, go down there, distribute it to them, and then play music, come home. And today, nowadays, he only plays every once a month, I think, but we still send a van down there. Our guys, my dad and Kavika Rogers, take the poi all the way down there to the Ohana, and also they distribute along the way as well, Kapa'a, Lihue, sometimes down along the south side.
Wow, I'm getting hungry just hearing about all of that poi going out to the world. And I've been fortunate enough to be at Poi Day. It has been some years since I've been there, but I must say it certainly is one of the most authentic Hawaiian experiences to sit with the multi-generations and to sit around the tubs of poi that are still warm from the pot, and just to take part in that is a really special experience. And I know that people have come for many years to join you year after year, and then one of the wonderful things is you welcome newcomers too.
So it takes a lot of people to make as much poi as we're making today. And we do welcome, we have Kupuna and Ohana community that have coming, and our regulars that have been coming for years. And like you said, we also welcome newcomers as well. It's pretty cool because we also have folks that we consider our Ohana now who are visitors and have been coming to Kauai from different areas of Hawaii or the mainland for years. They come back at the same time every year, and they come back to join us, and now those folks, too, have become like our Ohana. And so a typical poi day starts at 5 in the morning because we like to feed everybody lunch when we're done and go home at a decent hour. So we start about 5, usually finish, and are eating lunch between 12:30 and 1:30. And actually the kalo is... We purchase the kalo from farmers in Kealia and along the North Shore, and it gets delivered throughout earlier between Sunday and Wednesday. And then today, right now, actually, our guys are, our team, it's not all guys, are washing the kalo and setting it up to cook, and it cooks on Wednesday night. So by the time Thursday morning comes, the kalo is cooked and ready to, and cooled down and ready to peel. So folks, especially the kupuna, they like to get up early. And some of our staff show up at 5, and everybody's welcome to come at 5. It helps a lot to have a large team earlier on. But we go through 3 stages of hand peeling the kalo, peeling vili, which is a rinsing stage, and then scraping with a butter knife to get all the little hard pieces of skin off that you don't want to get stuck in your teeth or see in your poi, and then chopping the kalo up into smaller pieces, and then it goes in the grinders and comes out, and we individually bag each order. They go to different households, and then and we often, well, we always have some left over because one of our commitments is to provide a mahele for volunteers, which is a share. So everybody gets a share of poi to take home, and then we eat lunch, like I said, between 12:30 or 1:30. And that's it. And it is a great day to sit around, talk story, do something with your hands while you're talking story, and mingle with folks from our community and folks from afar, and just enjoy the day and do something productive and know that really what we're doing is not just feeding people and keeping poi eaten as a staple food, but also perpetuating a tradition of making poi. Obviously, that was our staple food, so that was what families did every week, was to make a batch of poi and eat it throughout the week because poi is a fermented food, right? So you just got to make it once a week, and then it will sour throughout the week, and you can eat it. You don't have to refrigerate it, as sour as it gets, really. So in my parents' generation and before that, Ohana used to make poi together, multi-generations. But today, not that many people make poi. You know, we're all caught up in this this economy and this modern society, and we're all working and don't have time to make poi. So Thursday Poi Days is a way to continue to pass down that tradition from our kupuna through us and to the children as a larger community in Ohana and not just a nuclear family.
Well, it's noted that you guys have subsisted and made do with a very humble facility, which has been totally capable, but I know that you've held the vision for years to have an even better facility, and you've held that vision, you've articulated that vision, and you've done fundraising over the years. And now I've heard the news, very exciting, that you guys are going to be able to actually build your new poi-making facility, and I'm wondering if you can share about that with us.
Oh, we are so excited. Actually, this poi mill and certified kitchen has been a community dream, literally, since Waipa got started 30 years ago. The founder saw that, really, in order for farmers to thrive, it helps a lot to thrive economically, financially. It helps a lot if you have a venue to process and create value-added products. And that's very true today. And the venue that the state requires in order to sell your product to the public is a state-certified kitchen. And that can be a very expensive investment because there are many requirements that go into that. So, yes, since I think we got our first land use permits to build these new community facilities in 2006 and set about fundraising and designing and permitting and all of it, really, over the last, 8 years now? And finally, we're successfully able to raise $1.7 million for the construction of 2 buildings, one of which will hold a dedicated poi-making space, and also separately a commercial kitchen where folks can make anything. There will be ovens and stoves and a walk-in fridge and a service window where folks can make anything from baked goods to salsa to prepared foods and plate lunches, and caterers can use it as well. So that's one building. The other building is an outdoor meeting gathering space with an emu in the center of it. so we can cook in it, and we can also sit down, talk story, eat, and share. And we anticipate Waipai using these facilities both for our current programs with children, youth, community, for training and cooking classes and all kinds of fun things, and to process the things that we're growing on the land. But we also really look forward to opening up both of these spaces for rental to community and food entrepreneurs from as far away as they want to come to process their own products and that they might want to sell to the public.
Wow, what a long time coming. That has so been needed on the North Shore community. There's so many brilliant chefs who just have the hardest time getting their product legal, so to speak, as you need a commercial kitchen in order to vend that stuff. I just commend you for sticking with it and seeing that through. And it sounds to me that this is definitely a vision for the future. This is not something that's just, for today, but also something that will stay there for the community to use for so many years. And Stacy, I wonder, you know, how do you envision the future of taro growing in Hawaii? And what do you think it will take for taro to continue to define Hawaii, say, for the next 100 years and beyond?
Wow, that's a huge question. So how do I envision kalo and its role in Hawaii? And my vision is that kalo comes back as our staple food, kalo and poi, in Hawaii, and that it's far more widely grown. And there are so many diverse varieties of kalo that can be prepared and eaten in so many ways that I think there's extraordinary opportunity to grow, sell, market different kinds of kalo and have people get a taste for all different kinds, because kalo is a starch food just like rice, potatoes, bread, pasta. Of course in Hawaii today we eat more of the latter four things that I named, and really not so much kalo and ulu and our native or traditional starches. But why not? You know, those things grow here. They're a huge part of our culture and the heritage of this place. I think there could be so much more focus put on expanding kalo, both in the form of poi and, you know, French fries, burgers, just however you use starches out there. And I think what it's going to also take to make that happen is to increase the production of it and really increase the kalo farming culture and expand that. You know, today the average age of our farmers is probably in their 60s, maybe even 70s, because it's kalo farming is hard work, and it's a struggle, and the price is also very low if you're selling it raw, the farm gate price. So it needs to be made more economically viable for children and, I mean, for the young people who might be interested in getting into growing it. And I think with facilities like the kitchen, that can happen. But, I think that's one big thing. And then just doing the kinds of things that we do that expose young people and kids to kalo and poi and how to make it and eat it, and they just get ma'a or familiar to it, and teaching and sharing and just creating basically a kalo culture, more of a kalo culture.
Wow, that's beautiful. To me, it sounds like a kalo renaissance that's you guys have certainly helped begin, and I feel it growing myself, and quite literally, I'm so grateful for all the work that you're doing in that direction, and I know you've got a lot of support out there from so many people. So to close out our conversation, Stacy, I wanted to ask you about the upcoming Taro Festival in December. I wonder if it's something I'm really excited about, and I wonder if you all have set a date for the Taro Festival and if you'd be willing to just talk to us a little bit about the Queen's Challenge as part of that festival.
Yes, it's pretty exciting. That's one thing that'll inspire people to grow kalo. and do their best at it. So the Waipa Kalo Festival will be held at Waipa on the Makai side, on the banks of Halulu Pond, where we've been having our festivals lately, just on, along Hanalei Bay. And we have set the date of Sunday, December 7th, from 11 to 5. For the Kalo Festival, and it should be a really amazing day. Again, beautiful music, all things Kalo, from food to contests, and we'll also have cakey activities, and it'll be a really fun day. And so the Queen's Challenge, I understand, is coming to Kauai this year. And that is sponsored by the Queen Liliuokalani Children's Center. And they give a prize to the largest. Forget if it's the largest or heaviest. Definitely one of those. I think it's the largest. Kalo, Hawaiian variety of kalo, that someone that is brought to the Kalo Festival and entered in the contest. And I believe the prize is $500. Which is amazing for a kalo. And so more information, we're actually going to post information. There will be information available through our website for that, waipafoundation.org, or folks can contact us at our office, 826-9969, for more information on the parameters of the Queen's Challenge, and be looking for that at the Kalo Festival on Sunday, December 7th.
Well, Stacy, thanks so much for taking a moment to talk with us. We just love your enthusiasm and your hard work and your sense of ohana and community. And I just pray for you and thank you so much for all the work that you do every single day of your life to bring us together over that poi bowl.
Thanks so much, Robin and Paul, for doing this show and promoting farming and gardening and eating local throughout Hawaii.
Oh, deep gratitude to you. We'll see you out there.
Okay. Aloha.
Aloha. This is In the Garden on the Farm with your hosts, Paul and Robin, and we're here until 1 o'clock, and at that time, you'll be enjoying Kauai Vibrations with Tracy, and then stick around for 3 to 5. We've got the Papule Show with Shaka Keaka, and so much other fine programming here on KKCR. Thanks for staying tuned to our community radio station and making community with us. In our final segment of the show, we're going to dip into some more secrets of the soil builders, and we are joined by our ready friend with many ready to share many secrets with us, and it's our good buddy Joseph Dunsmore. We've had him on the show a number of times. We're always happy he can join us. Joseph has been deeply involved in sustainable agriculture for over 30 years. He's worked in South America, Mexico, Puerto Rico. He's been on Kauai now for 15 years. He teaches at Waipa Foundation, and he makes fertilizers with local inputs. He's also serving on the board of the Kauai Farm Bureau. Good to have a sustainable practitioner as part of that organization. And we're happy to be talking all about the sweet success that we can have with molasses in our system. Welcome back, Joseph.
Thank you. It's really fun to be here.
Well, I know you've been using molasses extensively in many different processes that you do on the farm in the garden. And so why don't we start off by just really talking about what is molasses and how is it derived, and can we even get, I know we used to be able to get so much of it because of the sugarcane industry here, and where does that stand now for us here on Kauai?
Well, molasses is the byproduct of the sugar industry, and it's derived from sugarcane, at least on in Hawaii. They also make molasses from sugar beet and a few other plants when they're extracting sugar, and it's basically everything that's not the sucrose. So it's a lot of minerals, a lot of potassium, a lot of magnesium, there's calcium, there's all different kinds of minerals. There's a lot of carbon from the sugar that's residual sugar. And there's a lot of vitamins and trace minerals. Mm-hmm. It's been used for, ever since they started making sugar, and traditionally it's used for making rum because it's being inexpensive. Huh. A lot of times if you see the dark color of rum, it's because it was derived from molasses. It's been, as far as I know, I first learned about using molasses in agriculture in the early 80s because a lot of farmers, and I was involved in sustainable and organic and biological agriculture then, and a lot of the farmers in the Midwest were using it with calcium as a pre-emergence weed control. And what they would do with the molasses and the calcium would be feed the soil microbes, and then the microbes, the fungi, would digest the weed seed. So that was a practice that was used before the emergence of herbicides, which were, you know, a lot less volume and a lot less trouble to apply. And then it kind of fell out of use for a number of years. I mean, there was still a lot of old timers using it, but it wasn't really part of practice. But now it's starting to come back into use. Mm-hmm. The University of Hawaii did a study on controlling nematodes using molasses probably about 10 years ago and had tremendous success. So they have a document out on molasses for nematode control, which you can get off the internet.
Joseph, would you be willing to let us know exactly how that could work to take down the nematode population?
Well, what happens when you apply the sugar or the molasses is you create a lot of yeast, and the yeast eat up all the carbohydrate and the sugar, and then the fungi consume the dead yeast, and it's that action of yeast and fungi that creates an environment that's antagonistic to the nematode, and they basically die in the fermentation and with this yeast process. A lot of other things also happen. Like I said, it also rots the weed seeds. It also releases a lot of nutrients, especially phosphorus, and so it's an all-around soil amendment. And I usually, there's different ways to get it into the soil. I use it as a pre-plant. A lot of people use it also in their fertilizer blends to add a little extra carbohydrate. And whenever I apply nitrogen, no matter what form, even protein form like fish or something like that, anything that's going to break down into ammonia, I put the molasses because the carbon in the molasses will hold the ammonia in. Keep it from evaporating.
Oh, wow. That's a huge benefit. Because that's a regular problem we have with our animal manures is that they release a lot of the nitrogen that makes them so valuable. It volatilizes into the air, yes?
Yes. And we don't have, in our soils here, we don't have what they call a cation exchange capacity. So we don't have those negative charges that'll hold the positive charged ammonia in the soil. So it's important that we apply something when we're applying the fertilizer because there's nothing to hold it in the soil, so it'll just volatilize.
Now, there was a huge windfall to folks who were smart enough to stand in line and get a quantity of molasses a few years ago, yes? The closure of one of the sugar cane corporations, and was it A&B, or who gave away all that molasses?
It was Gay and Robinson. Closing down, leasing their land to Pioneer, whoever, I think it was Pioneer. And they had this big storage tank over at the harbor, and they wanted to take it down. So they gave away thousands of gallons of molasses, and a lot of the farmers on Hawaii, or Kauai, have lots of molasses, which is good. Molasses is relatively inexpensive. I think you can buy it right now at a feed store for probably about $6 a gallon. And the molasses that we're getting on Kauai right now is from the Maui sugar industry.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. So it is a Hawaii product. When I was out there looking, I noticed there's a couple different versions. There's one they call dry molasses. Have you ever heard of this one? It sounded like it wasn't dried molasses, as it may sound, but molasses that had been applied to some dry substrate and then sold off as dry molasses. So I wonder, do you know anything about that?
No, I haven't seen that. But I imagine that you could dry molasses, but I haven't seen it. More, it'd be like kind of like a real dark brown sugar.
Sure, I just think that when you have a thick, heavy liquid like that, the only way to really get it down is to get it into a tank with water and spray it down. And the dried one seems like it could be mixed in with your other dry fertilizers, so to speak. But not that I know anywhere around here where you could get that. I was just curious what your take on that might be.
Sounds like they spilled it. And then they're like, okay, how can we sell this stuff? It's dry molasses. There we go. But molasses is something, too, because it is somewhat perishable, it seems. I'm wondering about the storage of it. And if I've had a bucket of molasses around for, let's say, a few years, and maybe the lid was on and maybe the lid was off, is there a time at which maybe the molasses is imbued or gets inoculated maybe with some unfavorable biology, or do I not really need to worry about that?
It has to be diluted quite a bit to actually ferment. So molasses is very stable and lasts for years and years and years in its raw form. If you have the bucket, if you have the lid off the bucket, then it's it'll absorb the water from the atmosphere, and it'll get a little bit funky in the top maybe with a little bit of fermentation, but you have to add quite a bit of water to get the fermentation. So it's very stable.
Mm-hmm. It's also recommended as an additive or an activator for compost teas as well, yes?
Yeah, it's a food source for the microbes in compost teas, in the soils. It's also a food source for like foliar applications. You can add a little bit of molasses to help kind of chelate the minerals and create some biological activity on the leaves. You want to be a little bit careful because it can spot. So if it's like lettuces and things like that, you might want to be very sensitive when you use the molasses. A lot of people use it to increase flavor because it allows the plant to take up more carbohydrate, creates more carbohydrate within the plant. And I think a lot of pot growers use molasses. When you go to the fertilizer store, you see a lot of these products, and they're very expensive, and all they have is a little bit of molasses in them. So it's being reintroduced into agriculture.
We're speaking with Joseph Dunsmore of WIPAW Foundation, and he's a sustainable agriculture educator, practitioner here on Kauai for many years, and has a lot of personal experience working with some of these alternative amendments and even making them too. So I'm wondering about the importance of using organic as opposed to molasses that may have been done in a conventional system. Do you think that's important based on how it's extracted and any sort of residues that may result from conventional agriculture?
I wouldn't see a whole lot of differences. All the molasses that we're going to have available is all going to be from conventional growing. A lot of times organic, usually in sugarcane, usually means the absence of applying anything. So at least that wouldn't have residues in it. And so there's a chance that there could be some residue in molasses. In this world, I'm not sure how much difference that makes if the benefits outweigh the liabilities of it. But I have a really good feeling about using molasses myself. So,
well, and again, if we're feeding the beneficial microorganisms, when they proliferate, they digest things that are unhealthy in the environment, and at least if we're applying biology at the same time that we're applying the molasses, we're probably having a net positive benefit to our ecosystem.
Yeah, the microbes are taking things apart.
Yep, indeed.
Joseph, I wonder if you'd talk to us a little bit about how you've been using molasses to increase the fertility of the taro growing down at WIPAW, since we've been talking about taro all month. I'd love to know what your results have been and with the taro fields there.
I've been using molasses just a little bit when I fertilize, but mostly as a pre-plant. I pretty much use molasses as a pre-plant. Right now I'm doing a lot of experiments with molasses to rot nut grass. And because some of the patches are really full of nut grass, and if I can get a fungal environment into the soil, I have in the past rotted the nut grass, but it's tricky to get enough in and to create the right environment to rot the nut grass. And so this latest experiment has been getting enough carbaceous material into the soil, and also I've been using the IMO. So I've been applying the, I guess it would be like the IMO2 and the IMO3, and I've been washing it in water and washing out the fungal spores. I have some piles that are very high fungal, and then I've been mixing that fungal water with molasses. And my latest experiment that's been really going well, and I'm real excited about it, and that's an extract from the Hau flowers. In the past, I used the extract from the Hau bark, but I'm finding the flowers to be even more effective. Oh. And what that does is I make this extract, and I add that to the mix, and it adds a lot of the carbohydrate from the Hau flower, but it also creates kind of like an okra kind of slimy aloe kind of texture, and holds the molasses and is also a food source for these beneficial fungi. So I've been soaking the ground, and it's important that you soak the ground, not just a little bit on top, but you got to get it down 6 or 8 inches so that through the whole root profile you create this fungal environment. So that's been my experiment lately. And then I do that for all the benefits: rot the nut grass, rot the weed seeds, kill nematodes, make nutrients available. So it has a lot of benefits.
Well, it's clear that you're listening to some pretty deep voices in the agriculture ecosystem to come up with some of these combinations and experiments, and very exciting. I'd love to see it, and I know that you guys have some work days down there at WIPA. If people were feeling inspired after hearing about this system that you're developing and they wanted to come work side by side with you, what's the opportunity there for the work days at WIPA?
Well, you know, the work days at WIPA are varied. If they wanted to see, like, how I breed the fungi, where I get my inoculant for the fungi, and kind of the procedures that I follow, and some of the recipes and some of the tricks, and they could come on the days that I'm there, which is usually Tuesdays and Fridays, and probably best to call me and tell me when they want to come over, and then I could kind of, it's not like having to learn to be a brain surgeon or anything like that. It's pretty simple. Once you see it, it gets downloaded fairly quickly.
Great. And can you share your number with our listeners?
Yes, 639-3256. 639-3256.
Right on. Well, thank you so much, Joseph, for stepping into the studio with us again, out of the garden and into the studio. But we look forward to seeing you out there in the field, and thank you for continuing to be a pioneer of sustainable alternative techniques here on Kauai, and inspiring us to try our own experiments out.
Yeah, thank you. It was fun.
Mahalo. So just time enough for some announcements. We have a variety of different shows. Just time for a few announcements. We have a number of classes coming up at Kauai Community College. An Introduction to Aquaponic Systems workshop with Bernie Sau is on Saturdays, starting on October 18th and running through November 15th. The classes run from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. They'll be at the Kauai Community College Office of Continuing Education and Training and the farm. The telephone number, 245-8318. You can also register online. there will be an introduction to beekeeping class with Jimmy Trujillo, Saturdays, October 4 and 11, which is 9 a.m. to noon and 9 to 1 for the second class. Includes hands-on activities. That's at the Kauai Community College Bee Lab. And there's also a honey harvesting and wax processing class as well, Saturday, October 25th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., same location at KCC. And the same contact number for registration, 245-8318. And again, you can online register for OSET classes. If you do a web search for Kauai OSET, O-C-E-T, that'll bring you to their website. Reminder again that we have the 14th Biannual Kauai Community Seed and Plant Exchange coming up Sunday, November 2nd from noon to 5 p.m. at Molawa'a Organika'a Farm in Molawa'a, followed up by the second Aloha Aina Festival Seed Exchange Saturday, November 8th on the west side in Kekaha at the Kekaha Boathouse. We'll also be holding workshops on exchanging seeds, plants, and cuttings. The first one, Monday, October 6th at the Kauai Community Seed Bank in Molawa'a from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. And the second, the following Monday, October 13th at the Smoky Valley Park Clubhouse in Waimea. For more information, you can look at ribg.org or you can call 652-4118. If you'd like to have your ag-related event or announcement shared on air, please email it a couple of weeks in advance to inthegardenonthefarm@gmail.com. To hear previous broadcasts of the show, go to kkcr.org, click the audio archive tab at the top of the page, and that will lead you to many archive shows, but including In the Garden on the Farm. We'd like to thank the other members of our team, engineer Jack, phone tech Mac, webmaster Laura Christine, and our station manager Dean. Thanks to each one of you for your tremendous help making this show possible. And we want to thank you, listeners, for tuning in again to In the Garden on the Farm. Myself, Paul, and Robin are grateful that you join us in community each and every week. And we want to thank our guests on the show today, Stacy Sproat-Beck of WIPAW Foundation. You can find out more about her work at wipawfoundation.org. Or call 826-9969, the Kahlo Festival coming up Sunday, December 7th, and each and every Thursday there is a poi-making day there at Waipaw. Certainly not to be missed if you want a real authentic Hawaiian cultural experience. And then we want to thank as well Joseph Dunsmore, also of Waipaw Foundation, and he can be reached as well at, what's your number again?
Yes, 639-3256.
Thanks again, Joseph. And we want to thank you for tuning in. And please tune in again next week for more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land that gives us life. Aloha, everybody.